I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Today, we launch a series of conversations with the women leaders of the world. We begin with a remarkable woman who has waited tables, raised four sons, earned a master's degree from Harvard, and is now the leader of her country. When Ellen Johnson Sirleaf became president of Liberia in January 2006, she became not only the leader of a country, but a symbol of Africa's progress, a former political prisoner democratically elected as the first female head of state on the continent. Now, a year and a half into her term, the hard reality of reversing the damage of years of civil war and corruption has set in. She talked with us at her hotel in Washington this week. She's in the U.S. to give commencement addresses, meet supporters, and to raise money for scholarships for Liberian students. Madam President, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been president for a year and a half now. What has changed in that time?
A lot have changed, but I think the most important thing for me is the hope that has been rekindled in the population, particularly the young people. Other changes have to do with physical reconstruction. You know, there's a building boom. People are renovating and building their homes, the roads, the water, electricity, which we hadn't had for 15 years. Some of those are now in place. So the farms, people are going back to their farms, and we expect that there'll be a lot of food sufficiency when this current planting season is over.
I want to talk more about the infrastructure changes. I want to talk in detail about that, but I want to talk a little bit more about the hope that you mentioned. How are you seeing that renewed hope?
Today, people are out on the streets, even in the night, no longer fearful. You can see intimidation has gone. Children are back in their uniforms on the streets going to school. And more importantly, you look in people's faces and no longer you see despair and disappointment and dismay. What you do see, you see smiles on the faces of the children, laughter is back. And in the younger people, you just see in their eyes that maybe there is a future. I mean, we can rebuild our lives.
Now, you mentioned infrastructure, and everyone who's visited the country has talked about the need to rebuild infrastructure. But infrastructure is kind of one of these big words that people don't necessarily understand what it means. So could you help Americans understand exactly what you're talking about, and what's your top priority?
Well, let's talk first about the social infrastructure. Here we're talking about schools and medical facilities. Many of these schools were destroyed, and we're trying to rebuild them throughout the country, particularly in the rural areas. With the schools gone, kids stopped going to school. Clinics and hospitals, either bombed or totally looted, no longer functional. Certainly the staffing for those facilities left not only the rural areas, but many left the country in pursuit of better economic opportunities elsewhere. So just rebuilding the fiscal infrastructure is something that has consumed us. We've done quite a lot all over the country. Then the economic infrastructure, you're talking about the road system and the transport system and the communication system. Roads were not maintained anyway for over two decades. And in the war, most of the roads became totally impassable, unusable. We have heavy rains without maintenance. The roads do get destroyed very quickly. Bridges were bombed or for lack of maintenance, they did not survive the war. And so that meant mobility of people, mobility of goods and services were constrained by the lack of these facilities.
What about electricity? Does the average resident of the capital have consistent access to electricity when he or she wants it throughout the day?
Well, no. You know, for 15 years, our capital city was dark. Absolutely no electricity in the capital city. Said nothing about other places. But we were able to bring back some electricity, not a lot of it, but we installed some street lights and in some institutions like hospitals. And I can tell you that many kids had not seen electricity in their whole lives. I mean, they had only lanterns and candles. And when we first turned on the first set of street lights, that night children dance in the streets. Not too much electricity in homes as yet, but increasingly as we expand the generation capacity, children still, young people still study their lessons under the streetlights because they lack electricity in the homes. But that's starting to change. And now we're looking at the rural areas to see what we can do. We're trying to get our hydro reassessed to be able to get that renovated. It would take a couple of years to do that.
What is the most important factor in achieving real progress in taking care of these big ticket items? Is it private investment? Is it the international lending institutions? Is it intergovernmental support? What's the most important factor, in your opinion?
For now, is the support we get from partners, you know, like the United States, like the European Commission, like the World Bank. Those are the main ones that are supporting the restoration of these.
But what does that mean? Does that mean direct lending? Does it mean canceling
the
debt?
No, Liberia cannot use credit right now because we have a huge external debt, almost $4 billion. That debt has not been serviced for some two decades. So we're not able to borrow. But we do get grants now, bilateral grants, as well as the World Bank coming in with multilateral grants, still helping us to repair the roads. Water, we just brought water into the city, and an increasing number of people in their homes now get waters in the capital city and in some parts of the suburbs. But these are all for now supported through our partnership arrangement. Ultimately, though, for getting electricity in any significant way, we will have to go private, and we're trying to work on that.
If we could just spend one more minute, though, on the international partners. Now, you've been pressing since your election for help with restructuring that massive debt. Why do you think it's taking so long? Do you see any progress there?
Yes, we have had progress. It's taking long because the debt is huge. And in order to get the multilateral debt, which is not subject to cancellation, it has to be repaid by the bilaterals. That means the U.S. and other countries will have to put this money up. We've been favored by these institutions. They've come up with some very unique arrangements using some internal resources, but still there's a funding gap that requires our bilateral partners to put up extra money. Good promises are there. We also have to bring the European countries on board, and I tell you, many of the European countries a little bit reluctant because they say, you know, Liberia is America's responsibility and America should be able to put up the money and clear this debt. Well, the U.S. has indicated the cancellation of the entire bilateral debt.
Which was how much?
Which was about $390 million, I think, something like that. And now they've also agreed to put up some money to handle the debt of the African Development Bank and some of the World Bank. But still there's a gap, and the gap has to come from either some of our European partners or our traditional partners like the U.S., the U.K., and others that have agreed to cancel would have to put up more.
Well, what's your best argument to these countries, including to the U.S.? I mean, for as much goodwill as you've generated with your election and with your many visits and the warm relationships that you developed, there are a lot of people in this country who are always very skeptical about foreign aid in general. There are people in Europe where, you know, the economy is not as strong as it could be, who say that this money is better spent at home. What is your best argument to these other governments about why they should be supportive?
Well, first of all, we point out that Liberia is not a poor country. It's just a country that's been poorly managed, that we have enough resources that once we get a head start, once we get past these stumbling blocks, that we are able to support our needs. We are able to have the resources, natural resources, national resources to respond to the needs of our people. We also point out that much of this debt was accumulated through bad governance, and that, you know, much of it is also, that's a lot of it is bogus debt. This debt has not been serviced, and resources were given to governments that were known not to be performing. So it's not fair for our young children to inherit this debt from which they've received very low benefits. And then the other argument we make is that there's so much money that's been spent on peacekeeping that indeed if we settle this debt and Liberia was able then to use its resources, although the debt is not being serviced now, so it's not taking our resources, but it constrains us from being able to access, you know, different kinds of financing that would involve credit because of the debt burden. If we were able to do that, we could expand our economic activity.
So you're not taking on more debt, but no. Because of this big debt existing that hasn't been serviced, people can't lend to you, or they won't lend to you.
No, they won't, and we would not try to borrow because we know we've got to settle the debt issue first before we do that.
That's a situation many people can relate to as individuals, I'm sure.
Indeed.
Sounds very familiar to some. Well, what about private investment, though? I mean, the American businessman Bob Johnson recently led a delegation to Liberia with some business leaders and some, you know, cultural figures and so forth. Do those kinds of delegations actually yield any benefit?
Yes, they do, and we're beginning to see that happen. For example, the Bob Johnson initiative involves a $30 million facility, the greater portion of which is being put up by the Overseas Private Investment Corporation in partnership with Bob Johnson. But that's intended to provide credit facilities to Liberian businesses that will enable Liberians to take a much more meaningful role in the economy, something which this government would like to promote. And that's going to be a major boost. So the potential looks good, but the time lag is long. I keep telling people there's a long road between commitment and cash. And right now we're caught right in that period where we want to see this commitment turn into real, you know, live activities on the ground that's going to create jobs for our people and open up economic opportunities for Liberians and Liberia's partners.
Obviously, there's a lot of impatience on the part of the people for change. But what about you? Are you getting impatient?
No, I cannot afford to be impatient. I must keep my head above water and keep pushing. You know, I'm going to be the one that have to keep reassuring our people that, you know, be a little patient, it's coming. But at the same time, push the partners to say, you know, accelerate the implementation. You know, let's find the obstacles and the bottlenecks and let's get them out of the way. And it's beginning to work.
Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf on rebuilding her country after civil war. We have more just ahead as President Johnson Sirleaf talks about getting more women into positions of power.
Oh, it's definitely a statement. If I had enough women ready to take 50% of the positions in cabinet, I'd do that.
More with Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. That's next on Tell Me More.